Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at betterleadersbetterschools.com/book. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. This podcast is also a proud member of the Edu Podcast Network, podcasts for educators, podcasts by educators. You can listen to more great education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com. And our final sponsor is brought to you by Reclaiming the Classroom. Effective learning happens because of a relationship built between a teacher and a student, not due to government mandates and high-stakes testing. You can learn more at reclaimingtheclassroom.com. I created Better Leaders, Better Schools because I was fed up of not having deep conversations, vulnerable, authentic conversations about school leadership. And that's why you keep coming back week after week. You listen to this podcast as an investment in your own leadership development. If you would like to invest in the production of Better Leaders, Better Schools, I have really good news. It's extremely affordable. $1 or $2 a month will go very far and make a big impact. At $10 a month, I'll send you one of my favorite leadership books every 60 days. To become a patron, it's easy. Just click the link in the show notes, become a patron. Thank you for investing in yourself and thank you for investing in this podcast. Thank you for listening every week. Let's get this show started.
Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where school leaders go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top influencers in education. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Daniel Bauer.
And so just being present and being able to know everything that's happening in that room allows for, I would say, more trust and buy-in to coaching. You know, because again, if you've watched me once this year and you want to coach me, I'm like, you don't understand my classroom. You don't know what's going on. But if you're in there all the time, just hanging out, non-punitive, non-feedback, just being present, I think it helps to allow for more trust, which allows more coaching.
This might be my favorite episode yet that I've recorded for Better Leaders, Better Schools. And that's because I go way back with today's guest, Chad Whedon. We studied together at U of I, both taught in Atlanta, and now we're connected again in Chicago. I am so blessed to call this guy my friend. He is so smart. He has so much leadership wisdom to share, high levels of emotional intelligence, and I'll probably ask him back again on the show so we can learn from him again. I'm going to get out of the way. So excited to present to you today's episode with Chad Whedon.
Thanks, Dan. The feeling is absolutely mutual. It's awesome to connect with you. Despite we live in the same city, right. It's awesome to connect with you via Skype.
Here's the thing. It's a big city, Chad.
It is.
It's really hard. Traffic's terrible. You know, you've got children now in a wonderful yes. relationship. So, you know, just life gets so busy, man. So
I know. So I'm so thankful we have this time together.
Absolutely. Chad, what inspired you to be an educator? What inspired your career in education?
Great question. So I think what originally inspired my move towards education was my work as a camp counselor. When I was in high school and middle school, I sort of did theater a lot when I was growing up. But during summers, I spent a lot of time with kids as a camp counselor. And I loved theater and I loved the amazing rush after getting off stage, the applause, the accolades. It was always just this incredible high. And it only lasted about an hour or so. And then I needed it again. But at the end of the summer, hanging out with a bunch of first graders all summer and getting notes from parents and kiddos saying, you know, I had such an impact on my life. That was something that transcended anything I could get from theater. It lasted all year and completely inspired me to go into the work of teaching children, being with kids, adolescent development. So that passion really started at the end of high school.
How would you describe your leadership style, Chad, and how did you develop it?
So I would say my leadership style, the best metaphor I can use is, so the spaces we work in, I really like to work in sort of a playground environment. So you do what you do in your skill set and do it well. I trust my folks to be professionals and I want them to have the creative and intellectual freedom to do their work. So I always say, go play in the playground, go do what you need to do. However, collectively, we need to agree on what the boundary and the fence is for that playground. And so my job is to patrol the fence. So have the creative freedom, do whatever you want to do within the boundaries of that fence. But as soon as you cross that fence, I don't want you running into traffic and hurting yourself or anyone else. So really, when I talk about my leadership, it's, I don't want to say bounded autonomy either, but I really value that creative and intellectual freedom, but we have to agree within the confines of that. And so I see my job as maintaining that fence and making sure everyone plays safe and does their best work.
I like that idea of a steward of creativity and also safety. But Chad, so how did you get a common understanding of what that boundary would be like amongst, you know, very diverse staff, I'm sure?
Yeah.
How do you do
that?
That's
a great question. So I think I name that metaphor with my staff. So I when I talk about – I have to be clear on what I value. And so I spend, when I enter a building, I spend time talking about what I value, what my values are. And then I share that metaphor. But then we really get very clear on building that fence together. And that fence could be something as simple. I mean, it's something as simple as, you know, your student faculty handbook. That's very contrite, but that's sort of the basis of that. But larger than that is collecting on a common set of values and a common vision for the school. So I really think, you know, I think a lesser – I guess lesser put metaphor is that idea of rules and procedures for your staff and your kids. But that's a first step. Beyond that, I want to make sure that fence is our values. So currently in our school, our three values are mind, heart, and effort. And so every decision we make goes around those core values. And so a really incredible fence that you can build with your staff has to be value-based. Has to be value-based.
I love that idea of mind, heart, and value. Can you share a specific story of how that influenced the recent decision?
Yeah, sure. When I entered Edgebrook Elementary School, first step was sitting down. I interviewed all of our faculty and staff, stakeholders, parents, kids, and it was very clear no one knew the vision, no one knew the mission. So we spent a lot of time that first year rehashing out that vision and translating it into three values, you know, strong mind, strong heart, and enormous effort that goes behind those two values. And then so based on that, past couple years been figuring out, all right, so how do we make these values livable? How do we make kids embody them? How do we make it more than just words or posters on a wall? And so this year, in my third year at Edgebrook, we really wanted to dig into that value of heart. Because, you know, we can read stories, value-based stories, fables, whatever it may be to teach these values. But we really want kids to embody them. And so based on a grant through Chicago Public Fund last year, we instituted a K-8 mentoring program where our 5th through 8th grade classes are intentionally mentoring our K through 4th classes. And they meet 2 times a month. And it could be over anything. So some groups are working on science fairs, some groups are working on math, some groups are working on literacy. But we wanted to give our older kids the chance to really take care of someone, not just read about heart, but like actually show it. Mm. And so over the course of this year, we're trying to build our students' values around social just, caring, compassionate, kindness in the everyday, day-to-day action of the students at the school. So that's how a very specific value translated into a school-wide initiative driven by teachers.
Yeah, that's an incredible story that you shared with the listeners, too. And I love that idea and sense of giving back. It gives the kids, yep, I'm sure, some purpose, too. And they walk around with a little more pep in their step, you, yep, know, knowing that they're going to help out the kindergarten through fourth grade.
Yeah, we hope so. It's the idea that we are in a shared community. We have to take care of ourselves. It doesn't matter what age you are. We're all part of this community.
Chad, do you have a cheat sheet of those questions you asked the community when you first started at the school?
Yeah, actually, I stole them, to be totally transparent.
Yes.
Do you know, have you read the first 90 days?
No.
So
I barely could read. I mean, come
shut
on.
Shut up. Get out of here. So the first 90 days is a book. I cannot even remember the author right now. But it's sort of how the executive or the leader transitions into a new role. So it's this idea that after 90 days, you're going to be sucking energy from the organization the first 90 days because you're learning. So how can you plan your 90 days out that after that 90th day, you are adding to the organization instead of taking away in terms of your knowledge and learning? And so in this text were questions about where was the organization previously, where is the organization currently, and where do you see the organization moving in the future? And so I used those three basic questions, and I asked every constituent that same pattern of questions, and the results were incredible. Very consistent results about what people thought about the organization and where they want to take in the future. That helped me drive a lot of our decision-making the first year.
The beautiful part about that school leaders that are listening, when you ask those type of questions and you hear about problems, frustrations that the community has with the school, but then you also find out where they want to go, that sets up the blueprint of, you know, where you're all going to move to, and all the fighting and building consensus that you may do when you have a vision that is disconnected from your people, that's eliminated because they gave you the vision. So love what you're
doing. It is. It's great. And so when you unveil that strategic plan based on their feedback, they look at that and say, yeah, that makes sense.
And
so it was great.
Yeah. And you listen, and what I said was meaningful. So we'll definitely link up the first 90 days in the show notes, and listeners, you can grab that book and start asking away those questions.
Awesome.
Chad, how would your staff describe you?
So I was really lucky last year. I was able to do a 360 survey. Have you heard of the Leadership 360s?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that was a really powerful, overwhelming tool. So based on that, and just my ongoing reflection, I would say that everyone's strength is everyone's inherent challenge, right? Mm-hmm. And so, one of my strengths is, I would say, my drive and, my commitment to change and moving a building. And so I'm super passionate and dedicated for kids and for the school. And I work tirelessly to make that happen. And feedback I get from staff is they love that, inspires them. I make them work hard. They feel like what they're doing is important and valued. On the other side of that, is the feedback I do, I push people really hard. And sometimes I have a hard time, acknowledging or really identifying when it's too much. You know, you want to turn up the heat so people are moving, but I'm always dancing between turning up the heat and, you know, putting people on fire. That's my challenge, is I always want to get things done and I want to move the school forward. I just have to be super cognizant of people's load, people's threshold, intellectually and physically. And so that's always been my challenge. So I think my staff would definitely say I'm hardworking and passionate. On the other side, I work people pretty hard.
So how do you gauge when you've pushed too hard? Is it just the look in their face, or what is it?
Yeah, it's a look in their face. It could be when you ask a question in the meeting and the room is silent.
Ooh.
You know, that's like that's like very clear that we're doing too much. But I've forced myself and my staff as well just to name that. And I before I wanted to build it into meetings to at the end of our meeting say, okay, what we're doing now, how's the pace? How's the pace? Mm-hmm. Is the pace too much? Is the pace too quick? Is the pace too slow? And so asking that pacing question to my staff helps me get feedback on is it too much or not.
Chad, let's get a little vulnerable here. What has been your worst leadership mistake, and what did you learn from it?
So that's such a tough question, because I've made so many mistakes and really horrible, bad mistakes. My worst leadership mistake. I would say my biggest blunder was, do you remember when I tried to start that GLBT friendly school like 6 years ago? Remember that?
Yeah.
That was the biggest, and that was a series of mistakes. But when it all comes down to it, I wanted to start that safe space for kids. And I was, what drove me was kids. And what I realized though is that I needed to be much more politically astute to handle something as big as that. And so my biggest mistake was putting kids first and being naive to the political landscape and what I needed to do to get that school open. But overwhelmingly, when I think back, that was my greatest gift and my greatest mistake at the same time.
How is it your greatest gift?
I learned so much. I learned so much. I mean, essentially in 6 months, I had an idea for a school and went around and sold it to various stakeholders throughout the city of Chicago, people I've never met, people I had zero contact with. And, you know, getting just a school to provide a safe space for kids on a piece of paper one day to then being on CNN and other news stories about sort of the work that we were doing. So I just this idea of building a school, getting broad political support, it was just a great, great, great learning lesson.
Chad, I think I am you 6 years ago in the sense that I want to do what's right for kids. And when I see the political stuff, even in my current school, it just drives me mad.
Yeah.
You know, it just looks like BS to me. And I want to just completely, you know, call it what it is and eliminate it. But I don't think that would work. So what advice do you have for people like me that are ignoring that political aspect of our role?
Yeah, that's another great question. We can't. I guess I've realized that in a weird way that you have to navigate that for kids. It's been really hard for me to come to terms with that because I think you and I are teachers at our core. Mm-hmm. And I think you and I both feel most comfortable when we're in a classroom. But if kids are going to get what they need, the role of the principal is living in that space and navigating various constituents and stakeholders to drive your vision forward. And so, like I said, I've made so many mistakes because I've ignored that. And now I won't ignore that. So how can you use that as a tool to reach kids quicker and get your school where you want? I don't know if that answers your question, but it is crucial. I don't think I'm answering your question though.
You do in a general sense, right? So you're saying like that you can't ignore it, that you have to attune to that because it will open doors eventually, you know, ultimately for the children. Yeah. But I think like, okay, I get that. I need to tune in, like I said, to the political aspect, but how, right? How do you manage those political relationships?
I think I would go back to that idea of values. Mm-hmm. And so if, you know, whenever you build your value set as a school, you have to have those stakeholders at the table and make sure that they buy into that too. Because if you don't share that common set of values, you're not going to share that common set of trust. And so you have to have agreed upon norms and values if you're going to eventually have difficult conversations or just engaging them in the process. And so I would say having that common playing field of values is crucial. But then just building trust, keeping people in the loop. It amazes me, but just people want information. And once they feel like they have information, they're a part of decisions, they are invested that much more. And it doesn't take that much. And I guess the other thing is what I do politically is I try to thank people as much as possible. One of my practices is every Monday I sit down and I write at least one thank you note.
Yes, you do.
Right. And so that I don't know if that's a thank you note to a teacher or maybe it's a thank you note to a parent who I knew is just doing so much work. Or maybe it's an LSC member who I know has been having a rough 6 months or maybe it's a kid. But like value, like you got to model your values. And so I try to be as appreciative as possible. And so thanking stakeholders, whether you agree with them or not, for their work in the school is super crucial. So I've made that a part of my practice so that I can just constantly be in a place of appreciation.
That's so good. And I think as a challenge to us as leaders, those folks probably add value to your school somehow.
They do.
And so it's our job to get past our own junk and stuff to see those positive qualities of folks that may be hard to deal with, and then actually and honestly and with humility thank them for that.
Absolutely. Because at the end of the day, I mean, you assume everyone's intention is for kids to have a great education. And you just got to figure out what's behind that intention, where they're coming from. But yeah, like Parker Palmer's Courage to Teach.
Yeah.
Unpacking your baggage, because it's not about you. This, you know, the role of the leader, it's not about you. It's about serving people. Mm.
Hard pill to swallow sometimes, but no true words have been said.
Tell me about it.
So I like what you said about trust. Let's sit there for a moment.
Cool.
You were talking about people just want to be kept in the loop in terms of information. They want to be a part of decision making.
Yep.
And you talked about thanking folks too in terms of building trust. How else do you build trust with folks in your building?
Another great question. How do I build trust? I think consistency and knowing that actions matter more than your words is huge. And so if you say you're going to do it, you have to do it. And if you can't, you own up to it and apologize. And so I'm big on like meetings, observations, appointments. Like I'm going to be there. And if I can't be there, I own up and apologize if I can. And so following through with your work, your actions. Secondly, in terms of building trust is listening. Mm-hmm. Is oftentimes you
Wait, what'd you say?
Listening? Yeah, right. Shut up. making sure that you find time to listen to people. And so after school, another practice is I'll make a point to walk around and visit people I haven't visited for a while and just see how they're doing and making time to listen. So it's not like, here, I have some feedback. This needs to be done. It's how are you? What's going on? How can I help?
Wow.
So and then that last piece having people be a part of decisions is so crucial. So having your systems and structures in place where everyone, not everyone, because you can't do that all the time, but people are involved in decisions and they feel like they have ownership of the school. So between following up with your, you know, following up with your actions, listening, getting consensus in your decision making, I think that really helps to build trust.
Did that stuff always come naturally to you, or how'd you figure it out?
You know, I got to watch really great principals work. I think a lot of the role of, you know, the leader is very similar to like running your classroom. Like building trust with your kids is very similar to building trust with your staff. So I got to learn from two great principals and watched how they build trust and saw when it worked really well and then saw when it fell flat on its face. So I think I'm so thankful for the two of them, Rito Martinez and Troy Laravier, for teaching me so much. So watching them build trust really inspired me because it did not come easy. But it was definitely something that can be learned if you are vulnerable. And you lead with your heart open.
Do you have any tips for that in terms of being vulnerable?
Man, that's so tough. No, like therapy.
Yes.
Get your life together. Like, again, like it's not about you, and knowing very clearly that you're going to be wrong all the time and that you don't know everything and that you're the head learner and you have to model learning and knowing that you don't know everything. I don't know. I just know that I'm not as good as my staff and I lean on them because they know so much more than me. And this work isn't about me. It's about kids. So therapy, man, get yourself together. It's not about the ego.
Yeah, and you can answer or not. It just depends on, you know, what you want to do here. But I definitely go see a counselor. I see him once a month. But like you said, I mean, the lessons I've learned about myself have exponentially helped me grow, you know, just as a person.
Yeah.
And that obviously is going to bleed over to, you know, my profession as well.
Absolutely. There's nothing wrong with investing in your social-emotional health. I think I don't know why our society undervalues that, but I think everyone should see a counselor, a social worker, a therapist, because it helps you build strategies on how you can manage your social emotional health. I've done it before. I always believe in it. Everyone should do it.
For sure.
For sure.
Chad, knowing what you know now, what would you tell yourself as a novice principal?
As a novice principal, I think entering the building is key. Like that first 90 days, it's so crazy. It's very similar to teaching, right? Like that first month with teaching, that is, can be so hard, but it's so crucial for getting your kids to buy into what you want for this class. Same thing with, coming into school as a leader. I think that first couple months, it's make it or break it. If you make big, huge mistakes those first 2 months and bruise trust, that's going to take even longer to get back. So I think as a novice principal, I think I wasn't as strategic. I wasn't as planned. I wasn't as deliberate as I am now. And so that's what I would really, as a novice principal, I would need someone to coach me a lot more on those first 3 months and making sure that it is absolutely perfect walking into that building. And building those relationships, building trust. So in like month four, you can just zoom and get it going.
So Chad, coach us now. I got a new building. I'm going to start as a principal. What do I need to do?
What do you need to do? You listen for 30 days. You listen. You don't make one darn decision for 30 days. You sit and you listen to everyone. And I mean everyone, every single possible stakeholder. And then you sit down after you've listened to everyone and you just crunch and analyze that data, quantitative and qualitative. And then once you figured out what you want to do and where you think the school needs to go, then you report back to everyone what your analysis is. And you get their feedback. You make it better, and then you go out and you sell that mission and vision the next 30 days. But like, man, it's crucial, that listening piece. I mean, you don't know anything about that building, and people have been in that building for maybe 2 years, 10 years, 20 years. They may have had 3 kids come through that school, 5 kids. You have no business doing anything other than listening. That's a powerful, powerful tool.
So let's take another step back, though. Prior to getting my first principal position, I'm applying, right? I'm going through the interview process. It's me and 3 other candidates.
Yeah.
How do I speak to the school community in a way that is inspiring and gives them confidence so that I land that position? However, it's not me as a leader going in there with saying, we're doing this, right? Without that listening piece
yeah.
analysis of data and everything that you just mentioned?
Yeah, that's a great question. So first is your leadership story, right? Like why teach, why lead, and why do you want to be a leader, and why do you want to be a leader in that building? Those are essential questions you've got to answer for that school. And I do believe that there's a really good fit for school and for leader. You may be an exceptional leader, but a bad fit for a school. Like, I think the school needs you as much as you need the school. It's sort of, it's a symbiotic relationship. So I think I'm great for Edgebrook right now, and I've been so blessed to be there. But I may be at another school where I may not be a good fit. So with that, being very clear on your leadership story and why you want to lead and why you want to lead at that school, if your leadership story and your value set aligns with the schools, people will resonate with that, and they'll really be inspired, interested in your story and what you can do. And then the second piece is being able to follow up with tangible specifics on how you've managed change, how you manage human beings, how you coach folks. So if you have very specific anecdotes and stories and results, that helps bring some sort of notoriety to your words. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I'm writing it down because I'm preparing for my interview. So
you're going to be great.
This is great for me. I really appreciate it.
When you are at your first principal forum, let me know. I'm there in the audience.
No way. That'll be
totally crazy.
Totally.
I would love it. I'd love it.
Oh, gosh.
You would do great.
I'll be blushing. That's not going to work.
Dude, you'd be great. You're passionate. You will sell your story. You're going to be awesome for a school.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Chad, what's one class that we should add to our schools that currently isn't offered, to your knowledge, anywhere in our nation?
So I taught a class. I was at KIPP, Ascend Charter School over on the west side. And I developed a class for seventh graders, and I called it Liberation Arts. Hmm. And Liberation Arts was like critical race theory combined with social emotional intelligence and skills and development, and then just sort of classic humanities. But it was this idea of like, how can I provide a set of experiences where I unlock students' interest, their psyche, their baggage, and sort of mix it all around where they come out to be super self-owned, powerful human beings. And I think this idea of liberation arts, of liberating your heart, your mind, and who you are, that narrative piece is super crucial and missing in schools. And so I think liberation arts would be really cool for middle schoolers.
Do you have a story of a kid that really touched you through that class?
So that class was poo-pooed after a while. Okay. It was shut down. And actually, interestingly enough, it was shut down, I believe, for test prep. And after that, I left because I was I was not cool with it. But kids that were super touch, I don't know. I mean, like, one of my amazing students, Diamond Thompson, at KIPP, he just graduated college this week. Yeah. And so, like, it's that stuff that, I don't know if that class affected him. I don't know. But he's always been deep in my heart, my mind. He's an amazing young man. So to see him graduate from college and see all those other kids graduate from college, to me, is like the best thing ever, that hopefully some aspect of those classes helped and worked towards that.
Absolutely. That's why we do what we do. So
no kidding.
You.
Yep.
How you want to be remembered as a school leader, Chad?
How do I want to be remembered? Dan, I don't know. I mean, I think here it is. I don't need to be remembered. I don't want to be remembered. Mm. I don't want people to look back and say, man, we really miss Chad. You know, we really need Chad, or we really hate Chad. It's not about me. If I can walk away and a school is so well designed and so well run that it doesn't need me and I'm irrelevant, then I will know I've done my job. So I want to be remembered. I don't think I want to be.
It's an interesting answer to that. So
I think I want the work to stand for itself.
Yeah. Wonderful. What sets you apart from other folks in leaders in education? What do you think your secret sauce is?
Yeah, that's a great question. This idea of secret sauce. I don't know. I haven't reflected enough on that. I mean, I get feedback from folks and staff, and what they've said is sort of two things. One is this idea of coaching. And so I've had people say to me this year that we've never seen, like teachers have said, I've never had this much support in my career. And I just know that teaching can be so lonely. I'm very sensitive to making sure that they are supported. And so I think one secret sauce is coaching and support. And then the second one I would say is energy, is that I've got a lot of feedback from parents just like, there's an energy in the building that wasn't there before. And that's really, they attribute that to me. And I don't know if it's the way I communicate, the way I hold myself, but I think like I love my job and I love being around kids. I love talking about teaching. And when that happens, there's just natural energy that flows from me. And so I think that's a very secret sauce. Cause if you love your work and that can trickle down to the rest of the building, that's super powerful. So I'd say energy and coaching.
Yeah, your energy. You've always been a passionate guy, and that's something that I admire and respect about you. It's just it makes you fun to be around, you know, like you're like a light bulb, you know.
Right back at you.
Oh, come on. Stop that.
Seriously.
Tell me about the support, though. So you support teachers. It's great. I mean, I understand it. I want to put them in a position to be more successful in the school, get them what they need, remove any barriers in their way. But if you're so good at it, like what's it that you do? So either share a story specifically there or please break it down for us.
Yeah. So when I go in front of the staff initially and I tell them what my values are, one of my values or sort of like just beliefs is that you don't coach from your desk, you coach in the field, right? So you cannot go, if you're a baseball player, you cannot coach and walkie-talkie someone from your desk when they're on the field. You have to be next to them watching them. So a practice of mine is I don't work in my office. So if I have like email, budgets to crunch, PowerPoint presentations to do, I can do that on a laptop. So I am in classrooms as much as humanly possible. And so I'm working in classrooms just so I can be around teaching. And so that freaks people out because, you know, historically principals are glued to their desk, right? And that's such a killer of creativity and why you're doing the work. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, initially it freaked people out and we had to like go through this process to know that when I'm coming to your classroom, it's not that like formal observation 2 times a year. I'm in your classroom all the time where it's normal, it's comfortable. And all of a sudden we start to have a deeper understanding of what's happening in your classroom. And so just being present and being able to know everything that's happening in that room allows for, I would say, more trust and buy-in to coaching. You know, because again, if you've watched me once this year and you want to coach me, I'm like, you don't understand my classroom. You don't know what's going on. But if you're in there all the time, just hanging out, non-punitive, non-feedback, just being present, I think it helps to allow for more trust, which allows more coaching. Does that make sense?
Oh, totally. And you would not believe how many of the high class leaders like yourself that I've interviewed have said basically the same exact thing of not being tied to your office, your desk. No. And doing that work in the classroom. So, I mean, you set that culture. People know you. You probably started that since day one.
Yep.
Can I do that now halfway through the year? Or is that something I should just wait? You know?
No, absolutely. You can absolutely do that. Just be clear with folks. Like, who are you over like a freshman team, sophomore team, junior team? Or is it just sort of?
Yeah, basically have freshman and sophomore teachers.
Yeah, just, I mean, name it with them and be, you know, clear on why you're doing it. Because if you don't, they're going to go, wait, is that an observation? Was that a pop-in? Was that informal? Was that, you know, like they'll question it. But if you go, hey, I want to be around kids and I want to be around your work. So here's my new practice. This is coming from a place of just, I want to be with you. Yeah. And I think they'll be a little uncomfortable at first, but they'll move on. They really will.
You know, I'm going to tell them that Chad told me I had to do it. So we're
good
there.
Please don't. No, get out of here. So that's big. That's one big way to help coach. But then also just like I said, I have on my calendar when to drop by and check in on people. I make a point to drop by and check on people. And the calendar, another thing, besides not being at your desk, you have to be strategic with your calendar.
Yeah. I feel already stressed out working in my office with way too many demands, I feel like, than one man can handle.
Yeah.
So how do you work from a place of such creativity and action and inspiration in a classroom and still get stuff done? Because I would want to play and, you know, interact the whole time. Like
totally. Yeah. Have you heard of the Breakthrough Coach?
No.
So I highly recommend to anyone to go to the Breakthrough Coach. So this guy Malachi runs it, and his whole thing is in 2 days, I'm going to teach you how to be more efficient and to be strategic in your scheduling so you can enter the building at a normal hour and leave at a normal hour to see your family.
Wow.
And so a lot of it has to do with how you use your administrative clerks, if you have them, but then also it's just how you use your calendar, and how you are married to that calendar. So I put in blocks of, like, it sounds trite, but if I need to be creative, I put in a block to make sure I put time aside to be creative.
Right.
I put, and I color code everything. So green is instruction, blue is operations, and red are sort of parent communities. And I look at my calendar when I start to strategically plan Sunday, Monday. And if I'm not at least 60% green, so majority of my week, if that's not instruction, then something's wrong. And so I'm just married to that calendar. I follow it religiously. And like, if there are fires, but you also have to be able to have a team that could help to put out those fires so you can continue to do what you need to do. Does that help?
Yeah, for sure. Is Breakthrough Coach, is that a website or a book?
It's a book and it's a seminar. Yeah, and so breakthroughcoach.com, I think. They're coming back to Chicago soon. He does two-day workshops all over the country, and it has been one of the best workshops I've ever been to.
Okay, I'm definitely going to check that out. We'll link it up in the show notes so people, you can get the book and maybe register for a conference seminar as well. I do want to plug Justin Bader. He has the Principal Center. He has a podcast as well. He was a guest episode 7. And he has something called the 21-Day Instructional Challenge. It sounds a little similar, and he pushes educators and leaders to get into 10% of their evaluative load every single day so that everyone's hit once every 2 weeks. So going to what you're saying, it's just being super intentional with your calendar and making sure that you are always in classes. And he encourages people to listen, right, to collect some data, but then just to encourage, right? So it's not for evaluation. It's not necessarily even like tweak this, but building that trust, building those relationships just by listening, which Chad said is so important, and then encouraging, affirming the great stuff that they're doing.
And let's pause here for a message from our sponsors. Today's show is brought to you by Reclaiming the Classroom by Trenton Goebel. External forces such as government mandates and testing requirements have been reaching into America's classrooms to dictate the terms of the relationship between the teacher and the student. Reclaiming the Classroom presents a way to reinstate teacher autonomy, and intuition is the primary driver for student success. Reclaiming the Classroom provides a roadmap for teachers to get back to a position of power and respect, and offers administrators advice on how to support and encourage their efforts. Pick up the book today at reclaimingtheclassroom.com. You know, I'm just like you. I'm a school leader that wants to get better every single day, and that's why I created a free gift for you called The 15 Questions to Unlock Your Leadership Potential. You can grab it today for free by texting the word UNLOCK NOW to 33444. That's UNLOCK NOW to 33444, and The 15 Questions to Unlock Your Leadership Potential will be delivered straight to your inbox. And now back to our show.
That's a really great point, because – like the trust piece doesn't come with your formal evaluations, right? It comes in the gaps between them. That when you're checking on people, seeing how things are going, those super informal check-ins, that's where you build the trust. You don't build trust with the formals. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Just trying to live that out. So
yeah,
let's talk a little bit about balance. You have a family. So how do you balance that demanding job of principal and being there for family?
So I'm really lucky that I married an amazing man whose mother is a retired special education teacher and counselor. And my husband's aunt was an elementary school principal. And so although he is not in education, he gets this work.
Okay.
And he totally understands it. And we're really lucky that he's at home with our son. And so it allows me to be at work the amount of time I need to be at work. But again, it goes back to that calendar, in that I want to see my son as much as I possibly can.
Yep.
And so if I want to see him, I need to be at the office early and getting everything I need to get done so I can be out the door by 5:30 and see him. And so again, it's just being strategic. If you can plan it, you really can. And it's also powerful to say no. So again, I'm a slave to my calendar, and I just married a really awesome guy.
So 5:30 is typically the time you leave. What time do you get to school?
So between 6:30 and 7, I'm really good in the mornings. I'm great in the mornings. Afternoons are harder for me in terms of being creative. And so again, it depends. I'm usually late two nights a week, so till about 7-8 o'clock for meetings with parents or other community members. But if it's not a late night, I try to be out by 5:30 so I can at least go to the gym and spend time with my son.
How old is he now?
He is 2.5.
And what's the coolest thing that he's doing these days?
So not cool, but when we try to redirect him, or you know, he's doing something he shouldn't do, and we, you know, can you stop that? His response lately has been, "Relax, Dada, relax," because we will say to him, "Dude, relax, calm down." And so now he's saying back to us when we are redirecting him, "Relax, Dada, relax."
That's precious. He's internalizing what you're teaching him.
It's amazing. It's amazing. He's the greatest blessing in our lives.
I'm sure you're a great father, so I appreciate that.
I'm trying, man. Yeah. It's tough. What are you going to start?
Man, that's a great question. I'm sure the listeners want to know, but Eric and I, we've been married 8 years, and I think now's about the right time. So we're not trying not to have kids, and we'll just see, you know, how that happens. So
awesome. Fingers crossed.
Yes, yes, yes. How do you avoid distractions and stay focused at work? So we talked about being in the class, but you know what, other, you're a slave to the calendar. I get that too. Is there any tips or tricks you have for school leaders?
No, not necessarily. Like, again, I keep saying this, calendars and being, I guess, really, really clear on who owns what. Mm-hmm. And so we spend a lot of time at the beginning of the year with my assistant principal, clerk. I usually have a resident principal from the new leaders program. And just being super crucial, clear on who owns what, who coaches who, and making sure there's not any gray or abyss of who owns what. Because I think if it's not clear, then it is easy to get distracted. Yeah. You know what I mean? But just being relentless on who owns what, following up. So I value our leadership team meetings as administration team. Those are non-negotiables. We have to have an hour and a half of time where we sync our calendars, we sync our priorities, we check in on coaching, we check in on teachers, how's this person doing, how's this person doing. And then we've started a new practice where we're have you read The Skillful Teacher, Saphir's Skillful Teacher? So we've taken The Skillful Teacher. It's probably like the Bible on teaching. It's one of the best books I've ever read on teaching. And so as an administrative team, we're taking chapter by chapter, and we're taking 15 to 20 minutes a week just to discuss this teaching book and try to pull out strategies to help us coach better. And so how do you not get distracted? Again, you gotta plan time for you as a leadership team to identify priorities, strategize, and then also develop yourselves. That's been a really great part of our work that I'm really proud of.
And would you consider like reading The Skillful Teacher, using that almost as a book club and digging into what it means to coach folks? Is that part of the development, or is there something else you do?
No, it's mostly just for development. But it's also then taking that development and saying, here's what we've just learned or we just read. Who can we now go coach this? Who needs this? Who could benefit from this? So we try to directly link it to where our teachers are at and try to provide that differentiated coaching for them.
Gotcha. Okay. We're just going to have some rapid fire questions here, you know, maybe 30 seconds or less on your answers. And then we got the big one at the end. What do you do for fun, Chad? Cool.
What I do for fun, I run. I try to run as much as humanly possible. I read young adult books. And I play with my son.
What's one book every principal should read right now? You said First 90 Days, The Courage to Teach. There's The Breakthrough Coach, The Skillful Teacher. Is there anything else we should read?
Leadership on the Line. Have you read Leadership on the Line?
No, this is great. Leadership on
the Line. It's amazing. Leadership on the Line. Go get it. Read it. It's awesome.
One person you'd love to meet, either present or past.
One person I'd love to meet. Stephen Sondheim.
Okay. Why? Sondheim.
So do you know Stephen Sondheim?
No, but I'm gonna pretend I do.
Okay. Awesome. So Stephen Sondheim is one of the most influential musical theater lyricist and composers of the last 100 years.
Yeah.
He is, brilliant, and, he's so smart, and, his framework for creating art is something that I apply for creating schools. I'm just completely inspired by him and amazed by him. And he's in his late 80s, and I would love to meet him. I walked past him at an event once, and I couldn't even move because I was so scared. So I would love to have a chance to talk with him.
Can you describe his framework at all?
So it's more about he has these sort of, again, value sets that help decide his work. So this idea of less is more, content describes form, or your content of what you're dealing with will tell you the form in which it should take. God is in the details. So these sort of value sets, I found that in how he creates art, it's very similar for, I would say, the work of creating curriculum and designing a school to support kids.
Wow.
And that's a whole nother podcast we could talk about.
Okay. Well, we'll do that up.
Yeah, right?
Is there a tech resource that you leverage to help you be more effective at work besides your calendar? You already said that.
I'm obsessed with it. Google Apps. Google Apps is super awesome, amazing. I love it. I will do a small plug. I hope that's okay.
Totally okay.
It's one of the best technology tools in a while. It's called Teach Boost. Have you heard of Teach Boost?
No.
So Teach Boost makes, reflect and learn sucks, right? So Teach Boost is like reflect and learn done right. And that's all I'll say. It's a way to track your informal pop-ins for teachers. It has a wealth of stuff. If my staff wasn't already overwhelmed by Reflect and Learn, I would totally use Teach Boost. It's awesome.
It's so funny that you said it's Reflect and Learn done right, because it makes me think of our dashboard, Impact, CIM, all that stuff.
Totally.
I got to share with you this thing that Erica helped shape, and this guy Jeff from Northside College Prep. In Barton from
I saw that.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, there was a presented at PD a couple weeks ago, right? With Alfonso and Barton.
Yeah. But they've got their this thing they created, the dashboard, which really helps them make smart decisions based on data. But it's like, why did we have to create it? And how many hours of YouTube videos did we have to watch just to learn Excel to create this? It would have been nice to have it. So, okay, that's all right.
I totally agree. Those people who created it, the guy from Northside, and then Alfonso and Barton are awesome. They're super brilliant. It's amazing what they're doing.
Yeah. So here's the question, Chad. Cannot wait to see how you answer it. You are building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by budget. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you create the school if you're given a blank slate and unlimited resources? What would be your top three priorities building this school?
That's just the dream question, right?
Yeah.
For any leader. So the first answer is I'm a huge believer in curriculum and unit design and making sure that everything is completely aligned. And so the work of curriculum is so difficult and so challenging because behind that curriculum, not just outcomes, but rubrics and assessments. I mean, it's really hard work. And so if we had time and unlimited resources, I would train everyone in understanding by design and how to think like an assessor. I'd have them completely trained with rubric and assessment design. And we would spend a couple years making sure that we had the best, most incredibly aligned curriculum ever that's aligned to our values. And so as we're curriculum mapping with my staff, it's just such hard work to do during the year. I'd love time and training to build our maps and just have them be awesome. So that's one. Two is, I would say the space and innovation to build classrooms that align to our vision. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think space, I think a lot about the space in our schools and how we design our classrooms, and how you design your classroom and the school suggests what type of learning is happening. So how can we design spaces where kids are completely in charge of all of the learning? And I don't mean totally personalized either, but it's very clear that kids, that this space is for kids, not for adults. I can go into so much more detail about that, but I would think it'd be really fun to design a space that's completely student-centered. And then third is I'm fascinated with their use of technology. And so at our school now, we're doing learning cycles around blended learning. And so I really love to provide the amount of technology that allows for teachers to be innovative with both personalized learning, individualized learning, and then just pure differentiation. And so I guess, so to review, curriculum, space, and then technology.
Wonderful. Chad.
Is that cool?
Oh, it's so cool. Great answer. I really enjoy that. And I think I would love to get I'd love to get a panel together and just even discuss, you know, what would student-centered space look like and then start creating it, you know, because our schools can be just so outdated and cold and, you know, unfriendly. I'd love to move the needle on that one for sure.
Yeah, especially high schools, right? Like the school I want to create, I'd love a K-12 model. But man, some of our high schools look like prisons. It's tough.
Yeah. Even with the iron gates on the windows, it's like, what are we doing here? This is nuts.
Seriously, absolutely.
Chad, thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
So best way to get a hold of me. At Principal Whedon, which is my Twitter handle. We also have an Edgebrook Facebook account with Edgebrook Instagram account. You can find us both there, but then also go to edgebrookschool.org and you can find me there as well. Parting words. Parting words. I love Dan Bauer. Dan Bauer has always been someone who I absolutely think is an amazing human being. And so for everyone out there who's listening, please follow Dan Bauer and watch the amazing things he's going to do for kids in schools.
Thank you, Chad. Better Leaders, thank you for visiting, or excuse me. Better Leaders, take two. Better Leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. I'm not going to edit that out either. That's for you, listeners.
Good.
Remember that life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Chad. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Chad in the search bar. His show notes page will pop up where you'll get the highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources, and the best way to connect. If you have an iPhone, tap on the cover art and the show notes page will magically appear. Chad, thanks again for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
Thank you, Dan. I appreciate it.
Hey, Better Leaders. Thank you for joining us on the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Visit us at betterleadersbetterschools.com, a blog and podcast made specifically for you to help you meet your leadership potential. Do you want to be awesome? I know you do. Please leave a 5-star rating and review for us. Click the podcast artwork and long press the show some love link. That'll bring up a page where you can leave a review. This helps the show stay relevant in iTunes and reach a wider audience that wants to become a better leader. If you'd like to connect with me, and I would love to connect with you, there are also links in the show notes. The blog and podcast has an audience in over 100 countries. Connect with me via email, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, or the website betterleadersbetterschools.com.